misery, anxiety, economics, and this election. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. On the day the Federal Reserve was briefing the world on the U.S. economy, the stock market opened in a mixed condition. Interest rates were going higher, with the 10-year yield early today up to nearly 2%, in part because there's news that while the consumer price index fell for February, a lot of that was low gasoline prices, but the so-called core rate of inflation went up 0.3%, a figure that ignores volatile fuel and food prices. It is high time to check in with David Kelly, Chief Global Strategist at J.P. Morgan Funds.
I'm not that concerned that we're going to have runaway inflation, but it does show that there is growing inflation pressure in this economy. I believe that the core CPI inflation rate is probably the best measure of inflation that we have, and that's now running at 2.3% year over year. The Federal Reserve wanted confidence that inflation was approaching 2%. I think they certainly have got that now.
The Fed is, in fact, meeting today. You can imagine all their iPhones going off in the middle of their meeting with this data on CPI. What will you be watching for when Dr. Yellen comes out for her briefing?
Well, I think the Federal Reserve won't make any change this time, but I think she'll want to emphasize they are really watching the economic data, and so they could possibly move in April or move in June. Now, I don't think they're going to move in April, but I think she'll want to say that they could because they realize that the markets have basically fooled them twice now. We had volatility in August. That stopped them from moving in September. And now we've had volatility in January and February. That stopped them from moving in March. But they've got to stop just responding to the markets. They've got to start looking at the economic data, and the economic data say they should be raising rates.
David Kelly at J.P. Morgan Funds, thank you for this.
Anytime.
Meanwhile, the job market has been getting stronger. Take these two data sets, unemployment and inflation, and what you get is called the misery index, which some see as a predictor of who wins the presidency in 7.5 months. Carl Riccadonna, chief U.S. economist for Bloomberg LP, joins us now with his misery data. Carl, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
All right, so tell me about this misery index. How do you construct it?
Sure. So the misery index is an informal economic indicator, which basically adds together the unemployment rate and the rate of inflation. So if either is increasing or both, voters or individuals are becoming more miserable. When voters are becoming more miserable, they tend to throw the bums out. And when voters are becoming less miserable, they tend to reward the incumbents. And probably the best example of this was in the Reagan-Carter debates in 1980 when Ronald Reagan asked voters, are you better off now than you were 4 years ago? And based on the misery index, voters were not, and they voted Jimmy Carter out of office as a result.
So where's the misery index right now?
Right now, the misery index has been moving lower. This means that if the misery index continues to improve, that favors a victory for the Democrats.
But you know what? I mean, we've been out there covering this stuff. People don't say they're super happy right now. They say they're miserable, some of them.
But the unemployment rate has now crossed through what economists call full employment. And once you go beyond full employment, suddenly you start to get more wage pressures. That means households are taking in more income. People will be feeling a lot better about the misery index by the time Election Day rolls around on November 8th. And just taking one step back, if we look at this index, it is a remarkable predictive tool of presidential elections.
So it's my job to ask about at least the most recent miss. What was that, 1992?
So there's two misses. One was 76, which was Carter Ford, and that was really a referendum on Watergate. The other miss was George Bush Sr. versus Bill Clinton, and the economy had just gotten out of recession. It was going down favoring a re-election of George Bush, but it felt like that on Wall Street. It didn't feel like it was improving on Main Street just yet.
There you go. The difference between Wall Street and Main Street very often. Carl Riccadonna is chief U.S. economist for Bloomberg LP. Carl, thank you for this.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, the Marketplace newsroom here is keeping track of America's financial stress this election year through some scientific polling. Ours is the Marketplace Anxiety Index. Our findings are accumulating at marketplace.org all this week. This morning, the London Stock Exchange Group agreed to merge with the rival German securities exchange, the Deutsche Börse, in a deal worth about $30 billion. A combined exchange might attract business away from the many U.S. markets, from the New York Exchange to the NASDAQ, and there are several more. The BBC's Alex Ritson joins us now from London. Morning to you, Alex.
Good morning, David.
This is a reminder that there is money to be made in stock exchanges. Whether you're buying or selling, there's the middleman standing to make a profit.
And if this deal goes through, it's just enormous. 30 billion dollars would be the size of the combined group. They're trying to say this is a global marketplace. If you're going to list somewhere, come and list in Europe. Get the security of knowing that you've got a legal system that will protect you and that you've got a foot in London and you've got a foot in continental Europe right next to the European Central Bank in Frankfurt.
Now, you earlier said if a conditional, I guess, antitrust regulators in Europe will be scrutinizing this.
The European Union would love to see this happen, but they also have to look after the interests of investors. The London Stock Exchange Group and Deutsche Börse control a large part of the global's derivatives market. They reckon that the global derivatives market was something like 1.2 quadrillion. Now, a quadrillion, I didn't know this until a few minutes ago, is 1,000 times a trillion. 20 times the size of the entire global economy is traded on these derivatives markets. If this merger does go ahead, this combined company is going to have an enormous slice of that. And that, in other parts of the European Union, is going to create competition concerns. So it's by no means absolutely certain that this deal would be allowed to go ahead. We'll find out as time goes on.
By the way, quadrillion is just above gazillion, I think, in terms of a unit of measure. The BBC's Alex Ritson from London. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thank you, David.
P.S. The London Stock Exchange started in a coffee house, Jonathan's Coffee House, in 1761. The New York Stock Exchange started under a buttonwood tree at 68 Wall Street in 1792. I was just over there. There's no more tree, just a lamp pole with a no standing sign on it. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.